from KQED.
You're listening to Cued Up, Storytelling with Heart. I'm John Sepulvedo. Reporter Michael Montgomery met a man named George Arthur about 4 years ago.
You want to keep those headphones on? Is that, you like that?
It really feels like I'm going to space or something.
If you want to.
I think it's
kind of cool, right?
George showed up in Michael's San Francisco neighborhood in the Lower Haight. And Michael started getting in the habit of looking for George. And they sort of stayed in touch.
So how are you feeling?
A bit nervous.
What Michael learned about George is that he briefly served in the military. And after that, he became homeless. And that he had survived a dramatic suicide attempt.
I feel like at some point I asked you, you know, how you would describe yourself. And I think the first word that came to you was survivor.
Yeah. Yes. I am programmed to survive.
Programmed to survive.
Yes.
Programmed to survive. That's today's story on Cued Up from Michael Montgomery.
For the past 25 years or so, George Arthur has lived in flop houses, shelters, parks, sometimes on the sidewalk. I met George for the first time when I was touring the San Francisco jail. Officers were showing me a special section for military vets, a place they were proud of. It was peaceful. Inmates were busy working on an art project, and George was hanging out in the day room with the other men. He wanted to talk.
So how long have you been in this unit?
I've been in here a few times. This would be my third time here.
In and out.
In and out.
George tells me he's been in and out of jail for drugs and petty theft. I notice he walks with a limp and seems to be in pain.
I have literally enough metal on the inside of my skin, you know, holding my bones together, that I shouldn't be breathing, I shouldn't even be walking.
When I ask what he needs most, he says it's obvious, a safe place to live.
You know, when you don't have housing, you know, literally being on the streets, you know, it's a lot easier on the streets if you're on dope. You know, it just is. You know,
you're on drugs.
Yes.
If you're back on the streets, you think the likelihood is there's a danger you'll go back to drugs.
Oh, there's not a danger. It's just what is going to happen without question.
George was right. After he got out of jail, he went back to the streets and back to drugs. It was kind of weird because I kept bumping into George near my office in front of Trader Joe's. Sometimes he was in a daze and didn't recognize me. Then he started showing up close to my house at a small dog park.
I enjoy coming here for like the dog thing. You know, I mean, I grew up with dogs and I don't have one.
I made this recording about 2 years ago. George is lounging on a bench with his shirt off. I can see thick surgical scars around his lower back, on his shoulders, and in front of his neck. He's reading a paperback, nibbling on a bagel, and smiling at a small terrier named Pepper.
You know, oftentimes I feel as though I'm in combat or in a combat environment. You know, back here.
And you mean living on the streets, living in shelters? It feels like sometimes feels like a war zone.
Well, yeah.
Pepper.
You know, I agree with Pepper.
George is someone who's been through a lot. He's a survivor. I think he'd want me to say he's from Chicago. He's proud of that.
Charlie Berman is a social worker at Citywide Case Management, a program that provides services to San Francisco's homeless and mentally ill. He was assigned George's case, and it was a tough draw. George had racked up more than 200 visits to treatment programs in the emergency room. He was belligerent, sometimes violent.
George is someone who's been through things that I don't know if I could survive. He's had multiple traumatic brain injuries that make it really hard for him to remember things, to remember people, to, you know, kind of put events together and make good decisions.
George's brain injuries didn't happen in combat because he was never in combat. He joined the Marines back in the 1980s, hoping to follow in his father's footsteps, but he flunked out of basic training, a failure that still haunts him. Living in Chicago, George got married. They had a son who died just a few days after birth. George came west to escape. But in San Francisco, his marriage fell apart and he got deeper and deeper into drugs, weed, meth, cocaine. There were fights and a bad motorcycle accident.
And that was
in essence, kind of killing myself, killing the developed me. I mean, that's what I was doing.
George decided to finish the job. He remembers hopping a bus to San Francisco's Presidio, the former Army base. He drank a bottle of scotch. Then he made his way up to the Golden Gate Bridge. I got a copy of the Coast Guard report from that day, March 9th, 2008. It describes police officers rushing to the center of the bridge to save a man who's hanging by his hands from a railing. That man is you. Do you remember any of that?
Well, you know, I remember, I don't remember the hanging by the hands, huh? But I remember the incident itself.
You do remember it?
Of course.
The officers tried to talk George back. He let go and plunged some 200 feet into the water. A Coast Guard boat had been alerted, and the crew quickly pulled him out.
Do you have any memory of, like, realizing what you had just done? That you had just jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and hit the water, and you were still alive, and someone had just rescued you?
Whenever I speak about this incident, and at this moment, I come around to farewell. Can't do anything right.
Few people have survived a fall from the Golden Gate Bridge. Even fewer were ever able to walk again. George's recovery was brutal. He spent months in a hospital, immobilized. His case wasn't picked up by the media. Other survivors I spoke with have never heard of George. But over the years, he shared his story with therapists, caseworkers, and people he sees on the streets.
It was this really, really intense moment that I don't think I'll ever forget.
Joel Daniel Phillips is a young artist who creates iconic life-size drawings of people living on the streets. He met George at 6th and Mission Street, ground zero for San Francisco's homeless crisis.
George is kind of a long, tall cup of water, and we really connected. It was one of those moments where I ended up talking to him, I think, for like 45 minutes, and he told me this basic synopsis of his story, and I was totally astounded.
Abstract destruction.
Phillips recorded this video of George reciting one of the poems he's written over the years.
Subconscious interactions.
He snapped a couple of photos and from those images drew a portrait of George that's part of a larger series.
There are so many people who are essentially social dark matter, who for a variety of reasons we don't know how to respond to. And I think there's guilt and fear are the two biggest reasons that we don't do that. But people that we walk by and refuse to make eye contact with, even because we don't know how to start that conversation. I feel like if we do, that's, you know, a road, you know, down, you know, we don't have time to spend that or we don't have money to give or whatever it is.
One day I decided to go with George to 6th and Mission. It was the first time in a long time that I'd walked these blocks. Some people were zonked out. We passed one guy who was stripped down to his boxer shorts and screaming as he ripped through a suitcase. I noticed that George didn't like being here. Just like the homeless shelters, he felt in danger.
Well, oftentimes, I'll look around and I'll judge, you know, where is it going to be sort of safe for me to, like, make my path, you know. I've been sort of targeted, you know, based on the fact that I try to keep myself presentable, you know, which to a lot of people means, oh, there's money.
At the time, George didn't know about the growing push to get veterans off the streets, the billions of dollars the Obama administration was pumping into housing and support programs. In San Francisco, officials created a registry to prioritize the most urgent cases. But when it came to George, Charlie Berman, his caseworker, says some people thought he wasn't ready for the next step.
There's this kind of tension in housing policy, housing first versus housing readiness, where housing first is just giving people a place. And housing readiness is saying, okay, once they're sober, once they, you know, stop going to the hospital as much, once they complete treatment, then we'll give them a place. I'm not sure George would have ever met those metrics.
George wasn't sober, and he'd barely served in the military, but he made it onto the registry. And after being homeless for nearly 25 years, he got his own apartment at a place called Veterans Commons.
I remember them giving him the key and going upstairs and having him open his room, and I think he was in disbelief that it actually happened. He has such a pattern in his life of things not working out that for him actually to get what he wants, what he hoped for, is a big deal.
Hey, George, it's Charlie.
A few weeks after George got his new place, I joined Charlie Berman on a check-in visit.
Yeah, I'm just kind of stoned. And,
okay.
You know, and the place is like trash. I was just busy, you know, picking it up a little bit.
That's fine. I mean, yeah, would you mind if we came in and sat down? I promise I won't judge if it's messy.
We enter the small studio apartment. George is shirtless and in a daze.
Okay,
clothes,
you.
Papers, and food are scattered around the room.
Where would you like me to focus my cleaning efforts?
Housing's not a cure-all. There are these very tangible benefits for George that we can see, that he's not going to the hospital as much. He's making our appointments for the first time ever on time. It's amazing. And at the same time, he still struggles so much. And something that I've talked to him about is how certain behaviors like saving things you find on the ground or, you know, being aggressive and fighting with people as a way to defend yourself are really functional and make a lot of sense when you're living on the street, but just don't translate well into being housed.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Joel.
Welcome. Thanks for coming down.
Recently, George, Charlie, and Joel, he's the artist, gathered at Citywide Case Management's offices at 6th and Mission.
Beautiful portraits.
Joel brought along his portrait of George, mounted in a heavy frame. In the drawing, George is dressed in a t-shirt, sweatshirt, and surf shorts, and is staring straight at the viewer.
You're looking like you are actually heading to the beach.
Well, that's kind of like my look, you know.
I'm curious, George. What do you think?
Did I catch you?
This is charcoal and graphite.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
George leans down until his eyes are just a couple inches from the drawing.
It's interesting. You know, it is. It makes me wonder what it is that is in my mind. It's very expressive work. There's no question.
Do you like it?
I do.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but no, George was saying, well, where am I going to put this photograph or this portrait? And I'm like, George, you have a wall now.
It's ready to go.
It's been so long. You know, seriously.
George has a wall now. That is a great exchange. We're in the studio now with Michael Montgomery, the person who reported this story. You know, Michael, homelessness has been a problem for humanity since the advent of the house some 70,000 years ago. What was the strategy that ended up working for George in this particular case?
Well, there's really two things, John. There's resources, money, and then there's sort of focus. And on the resources side, you know, the federal government has pumped billions of dollars to try to address the issue with homeless vets, billions. And as we mentioned, there's been a significant drop in the homeless vets population over the last 6 or 7 years. On the other side of things, as we all know, money doesn't fix everything, and sometimes money is wasted. In this case, you had a real focus on addressing the most chronic problems. But what is interesting about San Francisco and other cities, what they did is they decided, okay, how do we figure out the problem? Well, you've got to quantify the problem. You have to know how big the problem is. So they created this registry, meaning they went out, they sent people out on the streets, and they registered all homeless vets. So they got a sense of the problem. Mm. And then they looked at, okay, what are the most chronic cases? So they prioritized that list. George made it onto this priority list. And because they had this kind of centralized list, all support agencies were able to come to that list and focus their resources on it. In other words, had there not been this registry, George Arthur would have had to apply at 5 different departments, 5 different agencies. Mm. He would have had to try to maintain those applications. He doesn't really have a cell phone. It would have been very difficult.
No, it's clear he doesn't really have his life together. And I'm not saying that with judgment. I'm saying by the fact that he's got stuff all over his floor and he needs help cleaning up.
Right. I mean, in fact, what's interesting, when you go to his apartment, you get a sense of this chaos that's somehow been contained. So it's not that there's not chaos anymore, but it's now kind of contained within this small studio apartment.
And it was interesting to hear it described almost as kind of this dark matter, but related to people. It's not just the emotional effort that goes in to help folks like George who desperately need help, but what you just described with all these different agencies and identifying and registering, that is a lot of resources. And I'm imagining, because that's a lot of resources, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And also it's a lot of, you know, human power. We heard from Charlie Berman, George's case manager. Charlie has put hours and hours and hours into helping George, you know, beyond whatever he's being paid. I mean, the people I met who are working with the homeless, whether veterans or others, are incredibly devoted, and they work really long, hard hours. And then another thing with George is that they've been able to find places for him to go. There's a drop-in center called Hummingbird at San Francisco General Hospital. It's a place he can go. He can go on the computer. He can shower. He can feel safe. In the past, the place he went when he needed anything was the emergency room, and we know, you know, what kind of costs that means when you have people going to the emergency room several times a week.
The other character in the story that is never necessarily named outright is George's addiction. It really seems to play an integral part in every single aspect of his story. And while I was listening to the experience of him in his house, I was reminded that in Minnesota, they have these things they call wet houses. And they are essentially places that they allow alcoholics and other folks who are addicted to substances essentially use. And it's a safe place for them to live and to kind of exist while still on the substance that they're addicted to. Is that basically the place that George is living at? It seems that it's at least accepted that he's doing these substances there.
It's accepted. I mean, there's been conversations about creating shelters or places in San Francisco, other California cities, where you would be able to use, you would be able to drink. That's been very controversial. In George's case, it was the housing first policy. If they would have waited for George to get clean and sober,
it would have never happened.
It would have never happened. Yeah. So they were willing to work with that. At the same time, you know, I think that his addictions have been curtailed to some degree. I mean, there was a time when George really was out of control. I mean, literally out of control, getting in fights, and that stress, that behavior has been reduced. Whether or not he's still using drugs today, I don't know. I do know that he's no longer going to the emergency room at all.
So the stability component seems paramount to deal with all the other issues first.
Exactly. I mean, that's certainly the argument. I think we've seen in George's case that it's worked. Are things perfect? No. But like I said, he's not going to the emergency room. He's his life has stabilized probably in as much as it can stabilize given his traumatic brain injuries and all the other problems he has.
So you said it's stabilized. George is still in that apartment?
George is still in that apartment.
That's great news. Michael Montgomery, it was a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us here on Cued Up.
Thanks, John.
And you've been listening to Cued Up, Storytelling with Heart. I'm John Sepulveda. George's story, produced and reported by Michael Montgomery, was first heard on the California Report magazine. If you're not listening to the California Report magazine, something is wrong with your ears. You need to be doing that right now. It was edited by Victoria Malione. She is the coolest editor at KQED, and you can subscribe to Cued Up wherever you get your podcasts.